Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our Shari Learning post Yom Tov. I hope everyone had a very meaningful, uplifting, special Yantif wherever you were and whoever you were celebrating with. We are learning Lidui Nishmas Miriam Frun, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzchak, Allah HaShem, and HaShem should have an Aliyah, continuous Aliyah, and the merit of our Torah, both through those who are Mechazik in person, and I just related a vignette about somebody who reached out to me, listened to a shir from a year and a half ago online from this chabur. It should be a schus for a continuous Aliyah for her neshama. She should be an advocate of Tov on behalf of her entire family. So we are on page, on main, 133. Okay, talking about which sefer, the second sefer, Joanna. 133 of the second sefer. Please open up. Okay. I was telling the kids that after Purim, Pesach's coming. After Pesach, it's spring. After the spring, Shavuos. After Shavuos, it's the summer. After the summer, there's the end of summer. Okay, there's a week, then it's Yantif. Then after Yantif, it's headed into a long, cold, dark winter. So Baruch Shem, we should be well to enjoy it, and it's the learning that really keeps us going, and application of our learning. Yes.
Wait, I thought of a very similar sentiment what you said, but it's not. We still have Shabbos every week. We can make that as joyous as possible.
Very nice. We do what is possible?
As joyous as possible. And
very nice. Beautiful. Right. Beautiful. And Shabbos Hashem comes to your house. Very, very nice. Beautiful. You are absolutely correct. Thank you, Nancy. Page 133. What did you say?
I thank God for Shabbos.
You know it.
She thanks God for Shabbos.
In many, many ways. Yes. Slow my life down.
Okay, let's go. Page 133. All right, we're talking about the levels of coming closer to Hashem. Let's just start in the middle of the page. You cannot immediately start with Shemona Esrei, as the Svarim HaKadoshim say, the holy books say. Even a person who cleaves to the Creator all day reaches the highest level of attachment during Tefillah. We just spent a whole month, really, 2 months, starting from the beginning of Elul with our increased prayers. My daughter said to me this morning, the kids go back to school tomorrow, but as of some, she said, no more the David. I said, no more the David. We just spent 2 months with such a heightened level of tefillah, really. And you can reach the highest level of attachment during tefillah, especially during the Shemona Esrei. So to paraphrase Nancy, even though we are out of Elul and we're out of Tishrei and all those extra tefillahs, Avinu Malkeinu, Shemasmi Ma'amakim, the Musaf that we daven, the Halal that we daven, the David, the Slichos, everything has come and gone. Nancy said, we still have Shabbos to keep us going. You can reach the highest level during Shemona Esrei. We don't have all the extra tefillahs, but every day we have the gift of standing before Hashem, Amida, in the brachas of Shemona Esrei. Even if a person remembers Hashem throughout the day, unless he is regularly talking to Hashem, he will be involved in other endeavors. Obviously, that's all of us. We are all involved constantly in other endeavors. Even if they are as noble as Torah learning, even if you're involved in something as worthy, as uplifting as Torah learning, you're still involved in something else. It's not per se tefillah. Since his head holds additional thoughts, his attachment to Hashem is not absolute, depending on his level. So, of course, the things that we do distract us from dveikus, from clinging to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're coming up to Bereishis. We've spoken about it in this class. It's so exciting, Baruch Hashem, to begin Torah Shevichtav, the written law, all over again. And the first appearance of tefillah is in Rashi and Bereishis, chapter 2, verse 5, Perek Beis, Pasuk Hey, the grass is not grown. We spoke about this Rashi. Why hasn't it grown? There was no one to recognize the goodness of rain. Along comes Adam, he prays for rain, and then everything sprouts. Depending on your level, the greatest attachment is through tefillah. It's something we all have to remember. I'm talking to myself. Going into that long, cold, dark winter, into the, how do you pronounce the word? Monotony?
Yeah.
The monotony of winter. So Nancy says, you have Shabbos. I say, based on what we're learning, we have Shemona Esrei. When a person comes to daven before Hashem, he detaches from everything around him in the world. When I learned, if you ask me to borrow my books, I would say, you can't borrow my books. This is why. I use them, I'm always bringing different books. I use them for shir. So how do I know when I want to tell you a story? I go. So Hashem has to help me remember what?
Where you put the note?
Where I read it. So there's a story, but I can't remember which biography I read in, so I couldn't bring it to you. I'm quoting the Gadol. There was a European Gadol. Maybe you remember and you could tell me. But there was a European Gadol on this sentence, he detaches from everything around him in the world. I couldn't remember which biography it was in, therefore I couldn't look it up, because I couldn't look through the notes in the back of every single biography. I mean, I guess I could have, but lack of time, it was impractical. The Gada was davening Shemon Esrei. It was in Europe before the war. And I believe the Russians attacked on the chandelier. Does anyone remember the story? It's a famous story. The chandelier fell down, and he didn't move.
It was in one of the magazines.
It was what?
It was in one of the magazines over Pesach.
It was recently in one of the magazines? I don't know. I read in a biography. Okay.
You get those magazines? Over Yom
Tov. I don't know. But it's in one of the biographies. I know. Anyway, the chandelier fell down and he didn't move. And there's a whole commotion after. He didn't know what was going on. He was in the middle of Shemester. He didn't even hear. He didn't even hear the chandelier fall down. He didn't know anything around him was happening. Why? Because Lamaisa, the highest level, is when you daven before Hashem, you should feel as if you're detached from everything around him in the world. You're totally devoted to speaking with Hashem. This detachment, if anyone remembers the Gadol, please tell me. This detachment generally cannot come radically, but in gradual stages. As one would climb a ladder, one rung after another. It's so true of any in interpersonal relationships. I'm sure that we know this from our lives, in eating healthy, in exercising more, in accomplishing a goal, and going to school to study for something. You don't walk into medical school and then the next day walk on and say, now I'm a doctor. Rungs, ladders, stages. In the physical world, there are stages to everything we do, and in our Avodas Hashem, service of God, there are stages to everything we do. On the next page, and we're going to get up to there in a minute, he's going to say there's no Kfitza Sadarach in Avodas Hashem, which means shortening, miraculous shortening of the path, the kvots. Like, you can't just jump. You know, we just had in Vizosa Bracha, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to the top of the mountain where he's about to die. And what does Rashi say there? He went in one step. Now, we, no, mere mortals, not on such a level, can go from base camp to the peak of the mountain in one step. And that, too, is a metaphor for our Avodas Hashem, stages. So one rung after another. Of course, this is foreshadowed to us in the dream of Yaakov Avinu, when Malachi Elokim Olam V'Yardibo, there are angels of God ascending and descending. And Vihine, who is on top of the ladder? Who kaviyachal, as if it were possible, standing on top of the ladder? The Ribbono Shel Olam's presence is on top of the ladder. Yaakov's on ground level. On the floor, there's a ladder, and they're going up and down. And it represents the tafkid of man in this world. Our whole lives, we're going up, hopefully not down, but sometimes we're going down. Hopefully more up than down. But the ladder always lets you go back up. That's a beauty. It doesn't slam shut behind you. That if you slip down, you always have the possibility to go back up. Yes?
I heard, I mean, it's related, not exactly, but I heard once on the words in Shemona Esrei, Mevarech Hashanim, that even physical bracha is in this same vein, that you're asking that you should get blessing, like if you want to, you know, let's say, Parnassa or whatever you're going to get, that it shouldn't be that you get like $1 million at once. It should be a kind of a gradual, it should be like you work daily, every day, like throughout the year.
That's very nice.
Kind of what that means, that is a more healthy and better way of receiving.
That's very nice, because if it must be, I don't know who you heard it from, but it's MS. But just an example, you see it's
no,
MS.
No, it was Rabbi Benovitz.
Rabbi?
Benovitz? You know, from NCSY Caldwell, he gave a shiur, and he was, I can't remember the rest of it.
But it's very interesting you're saying that, because they say about lottery winners that they win a lot of money.
Right, and they lose it.
And one lump sum, but what happens?
Right.
Very often.
It's just not a
they lose
way
it.
To
very nice, beautiful. It's such a good mashal,
right,
yeah.
Right. So he said that that's what that word means, Mevarech Hashanim. That it should be like year after year that you're like,
it shouldn't be Mevarech Hashana.
It should be Hashana, but it's just like, that each year you
nice.
Build, and it's not like a, you know.
Very, very nice. So once again, gradual. So not only, that's interesting, that's vis-a-vis the Ribbono Shel Olam to us. Here we're talking about us approaching God in levels and stages, rungs and a ladder. But that's lahafach, that when Hashem pays us back in turn and bestows the blessing upon us, it should be gradual in stages so we can utilize it more and you can access it more. So true, if we jump too high, too fast, so we're just
you
inevitably going to lose
it.
You don't
appreciate it in the same fashion and maybe it's not going to stick.
Very nice. Very nice. Anything else? You look like you maybe want to say something.
I'm saying if you, sometimes when you do things, it's like you get burnout the same way. Mm. In other words, it's always good to do things slower and gradually, because then you know it's going to stay with you. When you gung ho and you're gonna, like, you know, when I make my resolutions,
Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this and that Erev Rosh Hashanah, you know? And if you, so we all discuss the baby steps that we should take. Right. The same thing, Hashem wants to hear from us all year. He's not on purpose. He doesn't just open up the sky and shower us down with everything that we need for the entire year in a day, because then he won't hear from us that often.
So it's very interesting, because even you're bringing up, you know, the Kabbalists that we take, the New Year's resolutions that we take going into the new year. So I was reading, I was learning a very nice sefer over the Amim Tovim called Days of Ad, Days of Joy. I probably mentioned from it already and found this year and other shirim. It's a compilation of Divrei Torah from different Rabbanim put out by Torah Web. Very, very nice. So I was reading a piece by Meir Twersky. There's a number of pieces in there, Shlita. And one of the things that he speaks about is the idea of teshuva, because we're talking about gradual. And he said that we tend to think of teshuva as limited to Elul and Tishrei, the time for tshuva. But we just said, if you, you know, put yourself into something in an immediate time frame and don't hope to see Mevarech Hashanim over time, that what happens is you lose it. And he writes, and I've seen it as like a little, not a joke, a serious joke, passed around by WhatsApp, but I have no doubt that Rav Twersky Shita didn't get it from there. He said, I wonder how much we think about tshuva from the end of Tishrei through the next Elul. And it's not being facetious, it's being serious. He says, when the Rambam speaks about teshuva, I don't have the sefer in front of me, I wasn't planning to quote this, I believe there are 63, something like that, very large number of halachos dealing with tshuva and hilchos tshuva. Only, there are only, I believe, 6 mentions of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in the whole hilchos teshuva. He says, hilchos teshuva are not supposed to be only limited to a narrow time frame where you jump into teshuva and you think you reach the peak, the summit of the mountain. We're not Moshe Rabbeinu. We can't leap to the top of a mountain in one fell swoop. You think you reach it, and then you go back to being how you were before. He says, every day we need to do a cheshbon, a nefesh, an accounting of the soul. And he writes, when marriage was great, how much do we think of teshuva from the end of the Amim Tovim through next Elul? He says, not so much, but we should think about it more. And he says, when the Rambam speaks about hilchos teshuva, it is not limited to the Yamim Noram. He mentions only a handful of times, literally, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Regard to Chshuva. Joanna, why are you smiling?
Better is not on recording. We'll talk in a half hour.
Ali Shabbat, what did she say?
Better
is not on recording. Can't hear.
It's,
she doesn't
want to
say it on the recording.
It's,
she doesn't
want to
say it out loud.
Recording.
Oh, I'm here. Okay, let's go.
We'll circle back.
Okay, maybe you'll remember your thought later if you want. Here we go. Thus, when one starts to daven, he cannot immediately shift from his ordinary state to that of Shemon Esrei Dveikus. In other words, you can't go from doing all your regular things to standing in the Amidah in full concentration. There is progression. Of course, that is also what the Tefillah Shachris helps us to do. When you start with Moda Ani, and then you move to Brachos, and then you move to Korbanos, for in our case, maybe for some of us, the Korban Tamid that we're saying, and then you move to Ashrei Baruch Shama, maybe not in the Surah, depending if you daven Nesach Svar, Nesach Ashkenaz, okay. Okay, then you have Pesukei Dezirma, then you have the Brachos Kriyashma. So what are Chazal helping you do? Ascend a ladder with your tefillos, gradual. There is progression. Slowly one feels more and more closeness to Hashem. If you wish to jump right away to the Shemona Esrei, then you're looking for Kvitzas Haderech. Kvitzas Haderech is a miraculous, better explanation maybe than what I said. I think what I said was okay. Miraculous contraction of its path. It means a shortening of your road. You think it's going to take you 3 days to get there, and you daven for Kvitzas Haderech, and it took you 1 hour. Now, that's not going to happen. Bederech Klal, I'm not talking about taking an airplane if you're walking, but you're looking for Kvitzas Haderech in your spiritual path. You're looking to be packing up the kids' lunches and waiting at the bus stop. I'm not saying it's not a Vodas Hashem. Maybe you're doing laundry. Maybe you're exercising. You know, I told my daughter my exercise this morning. I was thinking to myself in my fast, we only have one guf, and Hashem gave it to us, and we have to take care of our body so that we could be better over the Hashem. But you can't go from being involved in the mundane to standing in the Shemona Esrei. It doesn't work. You're looking for Kvitzas Sadarach. In the physical world, we know only very few tzaddikim earn this miracle of Kvitzas Sadarach, contraction of the road. So too, we must know there is generally no kvitza sederach in spiritual growth. And perhaps he says generally because sometimes you do feel inspired by a certain moment or a certain event in your life, and that sticks with you, and that really becomes an impetus for. Am I saying it right?
Mm-hmm.
That becomes an impetus for tremendous growth and change. But generally. We're working on ourselves, our whole entire lives. Such an avoda. We just went through the avoda of Alon Tishrei. I'm sure that you have, you are, well, I'm going to take a question or comment in a second, Lishav. I'm sure you have your personal inyanim. I know I have my inyanim that I work on. And like Malki said, the Kabbalah, the resolution that we take, and something just came up tonight with something that I said, I'm not going to do it. Michal, don't open your mouth. Don't say anything. It's okay. Hashem, it's a test. It's not important. It's a constant work. Stages, rungs, ladders. We're always climbing, hopefully up. Yeah.
I think even when someone has an impetus, you know, because I know certain people have had like very dramatic events in their lives, and you
yes.
see that there's a change. But even that's an impetus to change. But as they're changing, it takes time. It's not
that's
overnight.
True. Okay,
maybe,
very nice.
Maybe
that's like the catalyst.
They wouldn't have even started that, but once they start it, it's like a constant avoda orfa. Yes, people have to do the work.
I feel like this is the whole concept of B'Shalach, that like there's the whole concept of the Makos, and then you see this Mizraim and this whole thing, and then Hashem doesn't take Bnei Yisrael, Derech Eretz Plishtim, Kikar Ovu, because he doesn't want to give them his pizza as Derech in general.
Very nice, Kikarvu. You're too close. You got to go around. You can't just go from being slaves quickly into Eretz Yisrael. Get the Torah. Even Matan Torah, you brought it to this time. We had to count up to Matan Torah. Days. We still count those days. We still count those days. You can't go from being a level of slaves on the 39th level of Tuma to saying, Kol Asher Dibra Shem Nasam Nishma. We are slaves on a very low level of impurity, and you want to come to Har Sinai. Talk about reaching the peak of the mountain. Pun is intended. Stages, days, very nice. But I do understand what you just said, and that is that'll be, maybe the better word is catalyst for change.
Right.
But
right.
You have to grab
onto
it. But
the change doesn't happen immediately.
Very nice.
Just,
very nice. We had various guests over over Yom Tov for the different Yom Tov meals. And one of the guests, probably a woman in her 20s who was a counselor for two other special needs women, said something, because I was talking to one of the women and I spoke there. Do you remember I spoke there? Whatever. So this other woman said, so how did you start giving shiurim? I'm relating this to what you said. So I said, very strange story, very unusual story, but I was in school. I have my bachelor's, I have my master's, I went to Brooklyn College, my degree in audiology. Then when my daughter was born, I took off time. And when she was two, I was expecting my twins, wasn't a good time to go to work. Then they were born 2 months premature, wasn't a good time to go to work. I'm talking about what you said, catalyst for change. And then we found out that one of them needed cochlear implants. And I would say that's my catalyst for change. So I have my degree in audiology, and I was very good at what I did. And I'm not saying this about a guy, but I'm saying a fact, got A+ at some of my externships, and my professors were very upset that they have this top student who's like not going to work. I'm like, what kind of waste is this? You did your whole education. Okay, well, my daughter was born, and then she was two, and then I was expecting, and then twins, and they were premature, and then one needed special services, and then surgeries, and cochlear implants, and I couldn't go to work, and intensive therapy. I'm pointing this out because I'd say it's catalyst for change, but Azos Hashem, soon these babies will be bar mitzvah. Yeah. So it's not like when I found out that my son was deaf, I'm like, oh, okay, so now he's deaf, so now I'm over there. Right. I'm still here, but it's the realization or the cast. So what you said is absolutely correct, and that's the only reason I'm sharing this, because I think it's a very true personal example that relates exactly to what you're saying. And then by the time I put all my amelus into that child for 3.5 years, which was a tremendous toil, and I thought, wait, now I'm not ready to be an audiologist. What should I do? I decided to give a shir. Someone needed refuah shleima, and I said, I'll give a shir. It was very minas shamayim. And yet I'm still battling. What was it tonight? It was so silly. It's going to sound to you so ridiculous that I'm like embarrassed to tell. I can't even tell it to you. It was so silly. My personal sign tonight said, don't say anything. It was so ridiculous, but we're still always working on ourselves. My son's turning 13. The catalyst for change was so many years ago. So it's not a bolt of lightning that brings you from here to the top of the mountain. But you hope that the Ribono Shel Olam opens your eyes to maybe help you realize you need to change direction. And then once he helps you change direction, it's a tremendous tafka to keep going on that path. So you're correct. You are very nicely correct. Okay. So I wanted to take you, just because we're talking about these stages, thought it was very nice and relates very nicely to our learning, because it's true not only in the realm of relationship between man and the divine, but also in the realm of relationship between man and fellow men. Interestingly, because I'm going to relate it now to spouses, I'm going to the Torah. Obviously, in Yuma Hos, when you look at Adam and Isha, it's like immediate. Maybe that's because there was only the two of them. It was such an innate and fine-tuned reaction. There was no development through stages of the relationship. He wakes up, she's there, and what does he say? Hapam azeh etzame atzamai basar mi basari. Right away, he's such romantic, beautiful, the most passionate words in the Torah. Bone from my bone, flesh from my flesh, lezosi karei isha, that's why she is called isha, ki mi ish luchazos, she's taken from man. And he knows, v'yeda adam eschava ishto, and he knows her right away. However, bedarach klal, it does not happen like that. And when we see, when we look at...
No people are born that way. Like, there was no process for them as people. They were born as fully grown adults. So they had a pizza sederach in their existence. So it makes sense that their relationships would be in that same sense.
Because why?
Because they were born as fully grown adults.
Created. Let's not say born.
Okay, so then they were created as adults. Like, they never had the concept of growing up, learning how to walk, right, like this development. They never had this.
You mean they were just there, fully formed, then fashioned.
So, like, they had the princess of their own, their creation and their development. So, like,
okay. Also, there was nobody else for him to, you know, cast his sight on. Like, it was either her or... Okay, very nice. But when we look in Parshas Chayei Sarah, okay, on Peruch of Dalet, which is the first Shirach in the Torah, no, really, I'm not making a joke, the first Shirach in the Torah, we see a different scenario, and I'm bringing this to you specifically because I think it's true, not I think it's true, scratch that, it's true in interpersonal relationships, aside from Adam and Isha, and very rare cases where right away those two people know that they absolutely want to be together. Generally, like the Mechaber uses the word generally, there's no kfitzas haderach. Just like we're working on our relationship with Hashem our whole lives, ladies, we're working with our relationship with fellow human beings our whole life. You know, I'm coming up to the end of the Rav Belsky biography, Zecher Tzadik Kodesh Levracha. Unbelievable. I highly recommend. It's on my website. It's recommended reading. If you didn't read it, I highly recommend it. Rav Belsky by Art Squad. But he said, people come to him with Shalom Bayis problems. But by the way, this isn't only true of Shalom Bayis. It means peace in the home problems. It could be true of other. And I'm not talking about Yotze Min HaKal and exceptions. But he said, people come to me and they say, I'm right. The man says, I'm right. And the wife says, I'm right. And everybody has to be right. He says, why do you have to be right? The main goal is that everybody should be happy. Now, again, please, this isn't marriage advice and it's not counseling. We're talking about when you can let the little things slide. I'm not talking about Yotzim in a klal and exceptions to the rule, a major disaster, chas v'shalom.
She had a social, what was her name? She's so cute. She said, you want to be, she was giving
Rachel Pill.
Said.
What?
Rachel Pill gave a whole series on relationship, and one of the things she said is, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? That was her famous line, and it rings in my brain all the time, and that's why I don't really care if I'm right or wrong. It doesn't really matter, because what's going to happen is we're not going to speak to each other for a week. Is that it's pointless. So it just, you know,
let it go. We're talking about the small
and that was professional advice.
I'm quoting Rav Belsky. Wait. I'm quoting Rav Belsky. This isn't coming from me. I'm telling you what I read. Rav Belsky, not me.
Okay?
Rav Belsky said, people come. This one says, I mean, this one. He says, the point is that people should be happy. And I even tell my kids, this is, they're fighting about the seats in the car, okay? Who gets this in the front and who called it first? So I said, you know, it's much, if everybody would be mevater, again, this is a small issue, translate this into adult level, if everybody would be mevater, then there would be no machlokas and everybody would be happy. The seat where you sit doesn't really matter. So I want to just quote from Parshas Chayei Sarah at the end, okay? One of the longest prakim in in Chomesh, one of Samech Zayim Pesukim Lang, 67 verses long, which is very long. Someone said something very nice, which I think of whenever I read this parak. Atar Habib, who got married a little bit later in life, and I know it was a beautiful family, and she once sat at my table. It was so beautiful. She said, "Why is the parak of the Shirach so long? To give us chizuk that even if it's taking a long time, in the end it will come. It will work in the end." Vatomer El Ha'ever Mi Ha'ish Halaza. So they're coming back, and Sarah has died in Parak of Gimel, and Avram has buried her. That's the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah. And after she dies, Avram realizes Yitzchak is alone. He survived the Akedah. We read about that on the Yomim Noraim. He survived the Akedah. We read about it on Rosh Hashanah. We spoke about last year. Joanna remembered the Shir. Remember? Yeah? And he needs a Shirach. So he sends the Eved Eliezer to go find the Shirach. And they find the Shirach. And she wants to come. Rivka's coming. Okay. So, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basada Lifnos Arev. Yitzchak goes out, says Rashi and Unkus, to daven in the field. We spoke about this a number of months ago. He's davening Mincha. Vayisa Eina. Vayar Vihine Gmalim Baim. He lifts his eyes and there are camels coming. Vatisa Rivka's Eina. Rivka lifts her eyes. Vateres Yitzchak. She sees Yitzchak and she falls. She prostrates, so to speak, from on top of the camel. And she says to the Eved who's bringing her back, "Who is this man going in the field to meet us?" And he said, "That's my master." And she understands that this is her basher. She takes her scarf and she covers herself. So the Eved, who's never named in this whole parak, very, very interesting situation, tells Yitzchak everything that happened. This is the last pasuk in parak Chaf Dalet. Vayivieha Yitzchak, and Yitzchak brings her, okay, so he's marrying Rivka, ha'ohala Sarah Imo, to the tent of Sarah, his mother. Rashi says he brought her to the tent, and she was like Sarah, his mother. You know this Rashi, she became the image of Sarah, his mother. And what brachos returned to the tent? Ner daluk, bracha be'isa, and the shechina, the cloud, on top of the tent. Oh. Three blessings that were in the tent of Sarah that disappeared after Sarah's death. Her candle was lit from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, from one week to another, candle made lit. The dough was always fresh and blessed in her dough, and the cloud representing the divine presence was over her tent. So after she died, those things disappeared. When Yitzchak brings Rivka back, what happens? They return, and he knows that she is the, I don't want to say incarnation of, that's not what I mean, but the one to take the place of Sarah to continue the lineage. So he brings her to the tent, vayikach es Rivka, and he takes Rivka. So first, wait, he brings her to the tent of Sarah, his mother. Vayikach es Rivka, he takes Rivka. Vatehi lo liisha, she is for him a wife. Vayahava, and he loves her. Note the order. When does it say he loves her? After everything, after the stages, after the process, after he's davening mincha, maybe he's in the middle of his amida, we could say, the Chazal say from here, Yitzchak was established the afternoon prayers, and she sees him, and she's covering with a scarf. He brings her to the tent. He takes her. She is for him a wife. He loves her. There's one more stage. Vayinachem Yitzchak acharei imo. And with that, Yitzchak is comforted after his wife. So there is not an immediate idea here, which has probably killed, unfortunately, one too many a shidduch, which is the idea of the pretzus of the modern world, that immediately, lightning bolts, that you're immediately going to love the other person. How could you immediately? And again, yes, there are exceptions to every rule. I understand. Everybody understands. Babaderech klal. Rav Shem Sherfal Hirsch has beautiful commentary. Rav Shem Sherfal Hirsch says, "This is a characteristic that, thank God, has not vanished from amongst the descendants of the patriarchs and matriarchs. It's so beautiful. The more she became his wife, the more he loved her." That's exactly what we're talking about. Translate that, kaviyachot, to our relationship with God. The more you know the one above, the more you talk to Hashem, the more you work on yourself, the more mitzvahs you do, the more you learn, the more you bring Hashem into your life. And we're talking about a marriage here. We just read it at the end of Devarim, that Zarach Miseir, that Hashem came, Moshe Rabbeinu says, in the beginning of Zosar Bracha, and he was like a chasan, come if you, I could open up, I don't want to take the Hashem was like a chasson coming to meet the kala, says Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a marriage between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the more you come to know, so to speak, the other party, the more love there is. And what's the highest level of Avodas Hashem? Not Yerushamayim, but Ahavas Hashem. Vayomer, Hashem misinai ba. Hashem came from Sinai. Vizarach miseir, says Rashi, yatzal lekrasam kishabo lehit yatzev betachtit har. Hashem came to meet them when we stood at the bottom of the mountain. Kechasan hayotze, like a groom who goes out, lahas bil pnei kala. Hashem came out of the chasen to meet the kala. So that's what we're talking. So listen again, this line of Shem Shefal Hush. The more she became his wife, the more he loved her. Like this marriage of the first Jewish son, Jewish marriages, most Jewish marriages, are contracted not on the basis of passion, but on the strength of reason and judgment. I'm going to repeat the pasuk. Vayivieha Yitzchak ha'ahala sara imo. Stage one, he brings her to the tent. Vayikachas Rivka. He takes Rivka. She is for him a wife. Then he loves her. Then ultimately comforted after his mother. Interestingly, this is just a window into the 1800s in Germany. Parents and relatives consider whether the two young people are suited to each other. Therefore, their love increases as they come to know each other better. Most non-Jewish marriages are made at the basis of what they call, and he puts this word in quotes, love. But we need a glance at novelistic depictions taken from life, and we see the vast gulf between the love of the partners before marriage and what often happens after. After marriage, it seems so dull and empty from what they imagined beforehand because this love is blind. Not so the Jewish marriage, or the ideal, I should say, of Jewish marriage, of which it says, Vayikach es Rivka, vatehi lo leisha, he took her, she was a wife, and only then what comes? The love. Here, the wedding is not the culmination of the love, but only the beginning of true love. And now, four more words. And he says, since God led Isha to Adam until the end of time, these four words, says Rav Hirsch, remain unsurpassed in beauty and glory. That's what Rav Hirsch says. The last four words of the Pasuk, from the beginning of time when Hashem led Isha to Adam, until the end of time, remain unsurpassed in beauty. Vayinachem Yitzchak acharei imo. Yitzchak was comforted after his mother. A 40-year-old man, inconsolable over the death of his aged mother, find consolation in the wife. This is the position of the Jewish woman, his wife. What nonsense to identify Jewish married life with sensuality and harem conditions. With Sarah's death, the feminine spirit departed from the home, and when Yitzchak brought Rivka back, it returned. This is the highest tribute that has ever been paid to the dignity and nobility of woman. And it is in the ancient history of Judaism. But the reason I thought of to bring it to you now is specific, it's very beautiful. But besides for that, I think it relates very much to what we're learning about stages, that we are not realistic if we think that in any relationship in life and in any endeavor in life and in any undertaking vis-a-vis fellow man or the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Almighty, that we can just have Kvitzas HaDerech, as our Mechaber calls it. There has to be gradual ascension and stages. And so nicely, I want to just quote one story from Rav Avadia Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. After talking and learning with HaChacham Avraham for a while, that was to become his father-in-law, HaRav Avadia and Margalit, who was to become his wife, took a walk outside. The naturally vivacious Margalit was doing most of the talking. He was nodding and smiling in response. At one point, she expressed her opinion. She said to him, "What do you think?" And he just turned to her and said, "I'm sorry, I was learning a sugya before we came. I got lost in thought." "What did you say?" She was upset. How could she marry a husband who didn't care what she was saying? She decided to call off the shidduch after that one meeting. But Rav Avadia sensed Margalit Fatal would make a good wife, and he pursued the match in an unusual manner. The Shabbat after the first meeting, he walked over to the Fatal home in Nachlaon. He asked if he could meet her again. He asked her father. The Chacham, the future father, was overjoyed, but he didn't think he could convince his daughter. She was very upset about what happened, he said, but we can talk in learning if you would like. As it happened the last time, he spent 3 hours talking to the future father-in-law learning. So he says, I don't think my daughter will meet with you, but we could talk in learning. Harav Avadia asked for a chance to talk to Margalit. He apologized profusely. It won't happen again. Could we take another walk today? To his relief, she agreed. They walked, they conversed for an hour. Harav Avadia turned and said, I have to deliver a shir in a Beit Knesset now, in Beit Yisrael. If you'd like, I can walk you home, or you could accompany me to the shul. You can listen from the Ezrat Nashim, the women's section. We can talk after. She decided to join him. She found a seat in the Ezrat Nashim. She could observe the proceedings. She realized that her relatively young suitor was being kissed by seniors decades older than him. They were kissing his hands. She sat transfixed as he delivered his shir. When the shir was over, the two of them walked again for an hour. He turned to her and said, I need to deliver another shir. Do you want to come along? Will it be on the same topic? No, a different topic. I'll come. The process repeated itself again a third time. By the time the day was over, she heard him deliver 3-hour-length shiurim, effortlessly tying it one topic to the next. She knew he had been with her immediately before the shiur, so he wasn't preparing. By the time he dropped her off at home that day, her impression of Harav Ovadia had completely turned around. She was taken by his brilliance, and from that day on, she never referred to him by his first name alone. Even when speaking to him privately, she always called him Harav Ovadia.
Wow.
Beautiful. Before they got engaged, he made sure she was ready for a life that would be spiritually rewarding but physically strenuous. He ensured she was willing to cover her hair, extremely unusual among her peers in those days. They celebrated their engagement, Hanukkah 1944. Okay, here's a picture of the young couple.
Oh,
look at that.
Amazing.
What?
Yeah. Also, if you didn't read this one, Rav Ovadia, Moran and Rav Ovadia, Art Scroll Biography, also. It's not on my website, but I recommend. Okay. I thought it was all very beautiful. I'm just, Be'ezras Hashem, all those looking should be Zocha and Roy to find their Zivun Hagun Bekaro, but also stages. But we have to be realistic in our impressions of what God expects of us, of what we expect from ourselves, and of what we expect from other people. That it has to be a process. Just like we must have realistic expectations and judge ourselves fairly, we also have to have realistic expectations and judge the other people in our lives fairly. That it's not enough to expect people around us to make one giant leap in moments. What did he say on the moon? One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Small step for man. Let's just do a little bit more, ladies. Let's just do a couple minutes more, okay? Therefore, as a rule, you must proceed gradually. At first, you will speak to Hashem with a certain sense of being distant. Then you will feel closer and closer until you reach an inner level of closeness to the Creator. By the way, it might even be that at first you feel artificial. But you're not doing it with the proper intent necessarily right away, but you know if you keep doing something, the intent will also come until you reach an inner level of closeness to the Creator. Certainly, every rule has an exception. There are days in which there's a stronger sense of distance. That's true. We know that from our own tefillos. Certainly, we don't always feel the same by every Shmona Esrei. Sometimes you do feel closer to Hashem, and sometimes you do feel Chalila, but it happens more distant from Hashem. And there are days which you feel closer. In general, one step at a time. You start with the surface level of the soil. That's the soul. I said soil? You start with the surface level of the soul, the neshama, the point furthest from the Creator. Dig deeper, level after level, until you reach the inner point of the heart that feels the Creator clearly. So I'm just going to end with a beautiful vart that my son actually told me in the name of Rabbi Stefanski. Okay, so it's very, very nice. We just finished saying Kapitel Chav Zayin, chapter 27, for a month and a half. So David HaMelech says in Kapitel Chaf Zayim, Achol Sha'alti Meis Hashem, you under this pasuk, one thing I ask of God, Osa Avakesh, this is a request, what do I ask from God? Shifti Beveis Hashem Kol Yimei Chayai, to dwell in the house of God all the days of my life, Lachzos Beno Hashem, to gaze upon the pleasantness of God, Ulevakar Beheichalo, and to visit in the sanctuary. How many things did David HaMelech ask for in that pasuk?
Three.
Achol Sha'alti Meis Hashem. Osa Vagash. I have one request, God. What do I want from you? To shifti beveis Hashem koi mechai. I want to dwell in your house all days of my life. Lachzos benom Hashem. I want to behold the pleasantness and the countenance of God. And I also want to visit in his sanctuary. So of course there are different ways of interpreting those, but until my son told this Dvar Torah over a couple of weeks ago at the table during this time period, in the name of Rabbi Stansky, please forgive me. I don't know his first name. I never done them before. How many things is David HaMelech asking for? One thing you want from God, you just give a whole list. So Stefanski says, King David is saying, Hashem, we learn from you. The pasuk says in Devar, very, very famous pasuk in Perek Yod, if I could just find it here. What does Hashem say to us? Va'ata Yisrael and Ekev, Ma Hashem Elkech Hashem Mimach. What does God want from you? Such an easy thing. Kim Liras Hashem Elkech. All I have to do is fear God, revere him. No, that's not all. You have to do La'alachas B'chol Drachav. You have to go in his ways. You have to revere him. You have to go in all his ways. La'ava also, we just spoke about love. You have to love him. La'avodas Hashem Elkech. You have to serve him. Not only do you have to serve him with all your heart, with all your soul. So, Ma Hashem Elkech Hashem Mimach. One thing we want from you. Fear God. Fear God. And go in his ways. And do the mitzvahs. And love him. And serve him with all your heart, with all your soul. It's a whole list. It's all in. So what are you telling me? So David HaMelech says, Hashem, I learn from you. Say only one thing, but it's not one thing. So I say only one thing, but it's also not one thing. So what's the pshat? So, my son explained in the name of Rabbi Stefanski, you start by wanting one thing, or you think you only want one thing, but when that one thing is so good, what happens?
You want more.
Why? Because you appreciate how tremendous it is, how geshmak it is, how rewarding it is, how good it makes you feel. So we start with Achol Sha'alti Meis Hashem Osavake Shifti Beveis Hashem Kol Yimei Chayai. You start with one thing. Hashem, please, I want to dwell in your house all the days of my life. But when you dwell in the house of Hashem, you're so close to beholding the countenance and the pleasantness of God. It's not enough to just sit there. You want a little bit more. And now that you're sitting in the house and dwelling in his countenance and his pleasantness, now you also want to visit in the sanctuary. You want a little bit more. What does Hashem say? I want one thing from you. Please fear me. But Hashem says, you're so beloved to me. I love you so much. I need a little bit more from you. You're so beloved to me, my precious children. I need a little bit more from you. Like a parent who sees a child starting to excel. Once a child starts to blossom, the parent says, let's not stop here. A little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. But it all goes back to stages. You start by saying one thing, but you don't really want one thing. But when do you realize you want more? When you ascend the ladder one rung, you want another rung. And then you send one rung and you want one more rung. And then you send that rung and you want one rung. Who do we learn from? Ribbono Shel Olam, who's always saying, I want more and more and more from you. So Be'ezras Hashem, we should be so fortunate that Hashem should open our eyes. And when he puts the path in front of us and the impetus for change, we should realize that sometimes we need to switch gears a little bit and shift our path. And Hashem is telling us, maybe you should be going this way. Maybe it's better for you. And then that begins the avodah of a lifetime. Okay, ladies, Ushu B'Sorz Tovos. Thank you for coming. A wonderful Shabbos.